You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, October 17th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, David Dayen. On perhaps the most important WikiLeaks email from the Podesta files up to this time. Also on the program, Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman turning herself in, arrested for journalizing. Speaking of those emails, Julian Assange's internet connection severed by a state actor. We'll take some guesses. Also on the program, Trump TV. The ducks have been lined up, which means that the crap show over the next 3 weeks has got to get even more extreme, because now it's a sizzle reel. Is Paul Ryan done, ladies and gentlemen, as Speaker of the House? Meanwhile, Republican voter suppression continues as a backdrop for Donald Trump claiming the election is rigged. North Carolina GOP headquarters firebombed, and then Democrats raise $13,000 to put the place back together.
What's the matter with us?
We could talk about that.
Way too giving.
Former Attorney General Eric Holder announces he is going to try and perform citizen arrests on all the bankers. No, he is going to start an organization in conjunction perhaps with Obama to focus on redistricting in 2020. A ceasefire sought in Yemen. We could achieve part of that by stop firing on Yemen. And the Mosul assault begins, despite the fact that we telegraphed it. Now they know. That's not the way General Trump would run things.
Well, we don't know how to lead anymore.
We don't know how to lead.
Everything's wrong.
We have no idea.
Do you think MacArthur would do that?
I don't think MacArthur would do that at all. I feel like MacArthur would just... he wouldn't even tell him that he was coming back.
We wouldn't even know that MacArthur was MacArthur.
MacArthur would have said, I might be back. I may not be back.
MacArthur would say, you know, I hate to say this, but other people are forcing me to say this. So I'll say it.
Shall maybe return. Maybe I shan't return. You're just going to have to keep guessing.
Then he would pant.
Meant to have David Dayen on for 20 minutes today. We did a pre-taped interview. It ended up being like a 35-minute interview. Because it really does, his piece really does capture a bunch of different issues in the context of what he calls the most important WikiLeaks revelation. And to preface that, because I do think like let me play this clip of Glenn Greenwald on CNN's Reliable Sources with Brian Stetler this weekend. And he's talking about the emails that have been released via WikiLeaks. They are John Podesta's emails, thousands upon thousands, and dating back way before this Clinton campaign. And we're going to talk to David Dayan about one that is back from literally 8 years ago, almost to the day. But let's listen to what Glenn Greenwald has to say about the relevance of these WikiLeaks emails.
First of all, there's this massive transparency disparity in this election because we have unprecedented transparency into one campaign, the Clinton campaign. She has released her tax returns, financial disclosure documents for the Clinton Foundation. We read her emails as Secretary of State, not all of them, but many of them. And now the hack into her Clinton campaign. On the other side, you have almost no transparency into Donald Trump and his business practices and his campaign because he won't even release his tax returns, which is incredibly hypocritical for him to act as though there's these scandals being hidden when he's hiding essentially everything about himself. Hmm. That said, I think there are extremely interesting aspects of these emails, which maybe to political junkies or reporters seem like business as usual, but to the ordinary person, it sheds real light on the kind of games that get played, the kind of manipulation of public opinion that, even if it's common, is still really disturbing and therefore deserves lots of attention.
When you say,
now, I agree with all of what Glenn has just said. The only thing I would build upon this in terms of his assessment of what the emails show. They do show, like, the way that sausage gets made. But understand, and I think that he would agree with this, that largely speaking, from my perspective, the reason why 3 weeks out from an election, I haven't dedicated my whole show day after day to these emails is because the sausage that's being made there is very similar to the sausage that was being made on any campaign. I am quite confident that if we saw all of Bernie Sanders' emails or all of the emails, let's say, of Weaver, right? Or any of the other people working on Bernie Sanders' campaign over the past 8 years, we would see things that were very similar in nature. You would probably not see, like, hey, they want to meet with this billionaire. Although maybe, who knows, with the campaign people, you might see that as they worked on other campaigns. But largely speaking, and as David Dayan says in this interview that's coming up, it's like, if you saw like middle management from General Mills, you would see the same thing. So largely speaking, I think like there's a lot of fascinating things there that I think for people who are uninitiated into politics, but even for our audience, which I think is far more initiated into how politics gets made, there's interesting stuff in there, but it is not urgent insofar as this election, as far as I'm concerned. You know, so we've touched on it, but and I think we're going to, when there's a more comprehensive assessment of the emails, there's a lot of stuff to be learned to see how policy is made. And that is why we're talking to David Dayan about it. And we ended up talking about it for 40 minutes because you will hear from Dayan, his perspective, the most important revelation is more about like how this is how the sausage is made. And here is our opportunity right now to impact that sausage. And to a certain extent, when I see stuff like this, I lament that on the left, there's been too much energy. There's certainly been plenty of energy coming from the sort of the center left saying, you know, toe the line, don't criticize Hillary Clinton. We obviously don't subscribe to that. And have never subscribed to that at any juncture during, I don't know, I mean, predating this version of the show. But also on the left, there's been a lot of energy wasted on relitigating the primary rather than saying, okay, this is what we're looking at. best case scenario is it's going to be Clinton as opposed to Trump. How can we influence who Clinton ends up being as president? That's the most important question I think we have right now over the next 3 weeks. And you can go to Ohio and knock on doors. You can go to Nevada and knock on doors. You can go to Pennsylvania and knock on doors and still come home and sign a petition for Credo saying, you know, we want to see the Clinton administration do this, or we want to promote this person within the administration, because we keep hearing over and over again, particularly in the context of a divided government, personnel is policy. Speaking of personnel, as I look across the massive bullpen here at Majority Report headquarters, I just see the teeming throngs of all the people doing their work. Sometimes I'll just look around and I'll say, like, that one.
Okay, and where do you see these people?
They're all out in front here.
All right, okay. They're all at their desks. Is everybody taking notes on this?
They're all at their desks.
You have to monitor
working. Sam. And they're, what are those dividers? Little cubby dividers. I just look out in the teeming masses here that we have working here, and I say, like, what if we were to lose just like that row of people who are working in that area right there? Like, we just took those out. How would I replace them? Well, I don't. There was a time where I would worry about that as I looked out on the teeming people working there. How would I replace them all? Now I know. I've known this for a while. ZipRecruiter.com. You can post your job to 100+ job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. This is perfect for small businesses, medium-sized businesses. You don't have a human resources department. ZipRecruiter is basically your human resources department. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once. Watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. The interface is also hugely key. Because you can put, I had to jerry-rig my own when we got the latest two hires, who are basically celebrating their year anniversary. Like almost, technically probably at the end. Not past it. From the hiring, but not really starting to work. This is all sort of training period. Kelly, no. Kelly, you're fired. No, at the end of this week, because I went to go to this conference, and when I got back is when you guys started in earnest.
But my Facebook already gave me an update that it had been.
I don't care what your Facebook is saying. Facebook lies.
I judge all of my anniversaries by when I started in earnest.
Thank you.
It's always the consummate suck-up. Let's get back to the copy, though.
Well, the point is, look, with these guys, I had to jerry-rig a situation where I was, like, juggling the different lists and I somebody had told me, like, you should put it into, like, some type of, whatever, Excel spreadsheet. Really incredibly annoying.
And then they came in and we were like, they're weird.
I was lost, right. Okay, well, let's see. Who's the one who wore the sweater vest? All right, bing. With ZipRecruiter, you don't have to juggle emails. You don't have to juggle calls to your office. You quickly screen candidates. You rate them. You hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. Folks, I've told you this before. The best time to look for new candidates is when you don't need one. And you don't have to worry about, Matt just showing up like, I get Burning Man. I'm going to take off like in 5 days. Right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the great David Dayan.
You're impossible. Always have been. What will you tell them?
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is always a pleasure to welcome the most prolific, most insightful. And I'm not saying that relative to prolific. I'm saying both those words of our guests on this program. David Dayan, you can check out where he's written today or how many times today at his Tumblr at daviddayan.tumblr.com, or you can sign up for his tiny letter. He writes for the New Republic, for just about any The Intercept. David, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, and it's good to be here with the most prolific YouTube sensation of this election cycle.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Now, all right, so David, you have a piece in the New Republic. The most important WikiLeaks revelation isn't about Hillary Clinton. I want to get to that one, but I want to get your, overall, your take on these emails, because I have covered them to a certain extent, basically as I saw an email that I found was interesting. But as far as I can tell, there's no earth-shattering information here. But I want to get your take on it so that I get a bit of a reality check.
Well, I think what we'll soon talk about with the what I found is kind of earth shattering. But we can table that. You know, overall, this is a campaign, and like any sort of mid-sized to large corporation, where different personalities are strategizing about how to look in public. I don't think these would look much different if they were the internal emails of a mid-level executive at General Mills or at, General Electric or something, particularly in the marketing department, because that's what these read like to me. Just endless marketing emails about how to position oneself and one's brand and what to do with that. There's something to be said about how we've now received this very relentless transparency from one political candidate and from the other one, we can't even get, tax returns that we've expected for, had this expectation as a public for the last 40 years. So there's this wildly disproportionate relationship in terms of transparency. I think that there are noteworthy things within these emails. I have sort of a different take on we finally got the full transcripts of these Goldman Sachs speeches that she gave. And I actually think they're kind of fascinating as political intelligence gathering documents. Goldman Sachs was paying Hillary Clinton to give her information that they could potentially use in prioritizing their investments abroad. I mean, it's very clear to me. The first five questions in the first speech are all about Asia. At the time, Goldman Sachs was ramping up its presence in Asia, and they wanted to know if that was a good idea. In recent years, political intelligence firms and companies that specialize in this have been cited by the SEC because there's a fine line between political intelligence gathering and insider trading. So they're kind of fascinating documents to me. I feel like Goldman Sachs overpaid for what were a bunch of bromides that you could get in a Brookings Institution paper.
Right.
But it was kind of interesting to see that their focus had nothing to do with protect my business. It was, in not such a veiled way, do you think we should invest in Europe or in Asia?
That's interesting, and I should probably amend my statement in terms of saying earth-shattering in the context of this election, because I agree with you. I mean, I think that's what I enjoyed about your piece, and I think there are other emails, and there are other things that give us a sense of from how the sausage is made and how we can take advantage of that knowledge ourselves. I mean, in some ways, in the same way that in that Goldman Sachs speech, They were looking for political intelligence from Clinton. I think like one could look at that from these emails as well. And and speaking of that, so let's talk about the emails that you thought were particularly this particular email was particularly insightful and in some ways earth-shattering.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about the Podesta emails is John Podesta has not just been a Hillary Clinton confidant in his political career. He was chief. He was a key advisor and counselor to President Obama, and he ran the American Center for American Progress think tank for a while. And in 2008, he was the much like he is in 2016 for Hillary Clinton. He was the co-chair of President-elect Obama's transition team. And these emails go all the way back to that. And so we have the this window into the transition process in 2008. And there are a lot of emails that, go over this. But the one that I picked out for that particular piece was an email from Michael Froman to John Podesta. Now, Michael Froman, a long time, I believe he went to law school with Barack Obama. He introduced Barack Obama to Robert Rubin, who he was chief of staff for at the Treasury Department in the first Clinton administration. And he is sort of a long time follower and consigliere, I guess, to Barack Obama. And he was tapped to work on the transition with Podesta and others. At the time, Froman was working at Citigroup, and he was an unpaid advisor to the transition. So the emails are still in a Citigroup email address from Froman. And at the time, Citigroup was, you know, a failing company who needed a bailout from the United States government. And here is Michael Froman working on the transition. Now, the transition is largely about the hiring of personnel that will staff a new administration. And there's obviously a lot of pre-planning that goes into that. What we didn't know is just how much pre-planning happens well ahead of time. So Michael Froman delivers this document. And it's actually three documents to Podesta. This is a month before the election. The email is October 6th. The election was November 4th that year. So a month before the election, he gives this document. It's really around diversity in the cabinet. He says he's made three lists, one of women. So it was a binder full of women, if you want to call it that, in 2008. There's one list of non-white individuals who could serve in President Obama's cabinet. And then there's a third list, and it's Froman sort of gaming out who's going to get these coveted spots in the cabinet a month before the election.
And he's not, and to be clear here, he's not predicting, he's suggesting.
He's gaming it out. He's saying it's based on the suggestions I've received.
Okay.
Based on what I've heard from a range of voices, I mean, I assume what he's done is gone out into his networks and said, who do you think should be the Treasury Secretary, who do you think should be Defense Secretary, et cetera, et cetera.
But yeah, I mean, just to be clear, he's not predicting. He's not predicting necessarily.
No.
He's suggesting. He's like, I took a survey, and these are the people that people think would be good there,
right.
or these are the people who that I've spoken to would be comfortable with because they've all suggested it.
Right. You're not predicting what's going to be on today's show. You have a central role in determining what's going to be on today's show. So when you send a document saying this is going to be on today's show, you are not making a prediction.
Right.
No. He was the hiring manager, essentially. He was, you know, at And this has been said in articles subsequently that Frohman did the hiring, particularly of the economic team, in the transition period. We didn't have firm data on this until this document gets leaked. And of the cabinet positions, he correctly labels pretty much everybody. And that's from Rahm Emanuel being chief of staff to Arne Duncan being secretary of education to Kathleen Sebelius being secretary of health and human services, and on and on and on down the line, dozens of them. And most of them he gets right. And for treasury secretary, he gives three choices, Larry Summers, Robert Rubin, and Timothy Geithner. So that was the range that they were looking at that time. It was Robert Rubin, the head of the sort of Rubin School of economic policy in the Democratic Party, and two of his top proteges, Larry Summers and Tim Geithner.
And so, we should say Rubin had to drop out of the process because he had some type of tax situation, if I remember correctly now.
He was the head of Citigroup.
Yes, no, but there was some scandal that came out that was I can't remember what it was at the time now. But this, of course, was in 2008. It wasn't just that he was head of Citigroup. There was some other issue that made him a little bit toxic. He had sort of, I feel like a
And there was a campaign against Summers.
Right.
Largely around his comments toward women. So he was seen a little more toxic. And then, of course, Geithner had a tax issue. three of them really had their difficulties. But there wasn't another alternative. There wasn't another idea behind let's put the Rubin School acolytes into the position, a very key position at that time during the bailout and what to do with the financial industry, in charge of economic policymaking in the Obama administration. And this is a month before the election. A lot of people made the fact that Frohman was doing this and he was at Citigroup at the time. They're like, look, a Citigroup guy was planning the cabinet. And you can make that statement. I see it more as this is a month before the election. Everybody knew who was going to be lined up within a new Obama administration, and it was the same old people who had dictated economic policymaking in the previous Clinton administration, and they were just moving on back into their seats 8 years later. And, that is why the analogy that I make in that piece is that here we are 8 years later at the same basic time period, a month before the election. Now it's about 3 weeks. And we have to be cognizant of the fact that these key policymaking determinations are being carried out right now. And this idea that you can go all in and bash Trump and neglect what is going on currently within a Clinton transition it will be too late if you try to circle back after the election. The difference between 2008 and 2016 is that there's an actually existing movement around personnel that says we don't want that same old group to be in charge this time, that we need more diversity in terms not just of gender and race, but we need more diversity in terms of thought, in terms of experience, in terms of a different point of view than the kind of center-left dominance that has characterized economic policymaking in the Democratic Party for close to 25 years.
And in some respects, I mean, the other day you had Elizabeth Warren writing a letter to Obama requesting essentially Mary Jo White's resignation from the SEC. It seems to me that's part of that.
It is.
Tell me what you know about that.
It is. I mean, because, you know, within 12 hours, Obama said, I'm not doing that. And I don't think that Elizabeth Warren thought that Obama would say, oh, maybe I should fire Mary Jo White. That was all about positioning toward this next presidency of who would be acceptable and who would be unacceptable in filling out that cabinet. And, you know, we've seen that through the WikiLeaks emails that the Warren wing of the party has been on this for 2 years. There's a fascinating email describing a meeting between a top Hillary Clinton advisor and Dan Gelden, who is now chief of staff for Elizabeth Warren. At the time, he was just a top aide. And he is extremely direct that we need a change in personnel in a new Clinton administration. This has been Senator Warren's focus for the last year and a half publicly, and that the same group, the same pool of Robert Rubin acolytes and protégés is not going to work this time, whether or not they spent a lifetime on Wall Street. You know, Sheryl Sandberg, who was worked in the Treasury Department under Larry Summers, is not someone who worked her entire life on Wall Street. However, she has links to this kind of stale model of economic policy within the Democratic Party, such that I think she would be pushed back on if they tried to make her Treasury Secretary. The same for Lael Brainard, who is a Federal Reserve governor currently and was in the Treasury Department under Obama, and was a key Geithner aide at that time, and I think would get a lot of pushback, despite the fact that at the Federal Reserve she has been an advocate for keeping interest rates low. There is an the larger point is that it's not just about keeping people from Wall Street out of these top jobs. It's from keeping this entire mindset out of these top jobs. And this has been going on for a long time, and this is right now the key period. And there are these groups that are working toward this, and they need to be supported rather than told to shut up until after the election so we rid the nation of this Trumpian menace or whatever rationalization is being made. You can't ignore, you know, your own party's decision-making process at this point. It's too important. It will have too many ramifications for the next 4 years. Personnel is policy. The people that get selected will dictate and drive what is the primary concerns for the next 4 years.
And particularly in the context of a president who may or may not have a Senate controlled by her same party.
Or the House.
Or the House. And so it becomes so even makes, more so.
Yes, even more so. That makes the who gets selected for these key positions, who is enforcing the law, who is determining the focus, who is advising the president in terms of executive orders, in terms of what to prioritize, that is all a function of who's sitting in that room.
All right, so outline for me, and there are some people that we've seen, like Rohit Chopra, who is on the transition team, who's clearly, it seems to me, is the public manifestation of what we're seeing going behind the scenes, right? Where you see a person like that who is placed on the team, that's a function of the work that's being going to sort of push. But the idea is that the Clinton transition team slash soon to be administration needs to have a sense of what the political terrain is today, so that they don't, so that there are certain boundaries essentially where they are afraid to get too close to and right. pushing them away. And so, okay, so obviously Elizabeth Warren who are the groups that are actively working on this in terms of B, are there any other silos? Like, is there a functional equivalent to the Warren wing and everybody who's involved in that, the various groups that support that agenda? Is there an equivalent on like foreign affairs?
Right. Well, I mean, that is an issue, I think, within the Democratic Party, is that, first of all, it's too siloed, number one. Like, there should just be sort of a general personnel, we need progressive appointments kind of umbrella, rather than here's the economic and here's the environmental and here's the foreign affairs. Because if you don't do that, it goes down to what individuals within those silos are going to have the strength and will to push a hypothetical Clinton administration on those appointments, right? So if there's not that sort of willingness to go against the grain in the foreign affairs space, then you're not going to have the likelihood of progressive appointments there. And the same within the environment. My feeling is that there isn't a great equivalent to the Warren wing on those other silos, and that's really not a good thing.
I mean, what accounts for that failure? I mean, I see, I have some myopia here in terms of because of the where I sit in the universe of I guess left activism, but I'm seeing a lot of people who are still relitigating the primary as opposed to focusing on how do we impact the Clinton administration going forward. And right. is that what's going on? Like, why isn't I don't know who would be responsible for this, but why isn't the sort of the Bill McKibbins out there? Why are we not seeing those people who had organized so well against things like Keystone and whatnot? Where is there simply a lack of those people on a policy standpoint? Who is it because the environmental question, who is agitating for the next EPA?
I mean, that's interesting. I mean, personnel is a really, first of all, this is a very inside game. It isn't super easy to influence it. Warren has made it a priority, and she's made it a priority for 2 years. And she has groups like Root Strikers. There's a division of the Center for Economic and Policy Research that are very heavily focused on appointments, Public Citizen to an extent as well. And so, when you have a senator who actually be, voting on some of these things and has influence among her colleagues, because you need to pass through the Senate confirmation process for a lot of these individual appointments, you have the combination of that and several groups with a lot of members that can agitate from the outside, and you have the ability to place someone like, we should say, who Rohit Chopra is. He worked at the CFPB, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. I believe he was a one-time student of Elizabeth Warren's. He moved from there to the Center for American Progress, which is seen as sort of the government in waiting for Hillary Clinton for many years, and then he got selected to be in the transition, and this is seen as somebody who, is very trusted, particularly on issues around education, student debt, and finance. So it's good to have that voice in the mix. It doesn't necessarily mean that he has a ton of power there, but it's good to have him in the mix. So that's the product of 2 years of focus on this. and creating an environment where the Clinton team believes that it would be more advantageous to them to have a certain amount of appointments that would be acceptable to, you know, the Warren wing or whatever you want to call it.
Right. I mean, this is a negotiation.
We don't have that
on
some
level.
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't feel like that kind of architecture exists in the environmental space.
And I don't know that it exists in the foreign policy space, right? I mean,
right.
The hopeful thing that I saw was like on TPP, where they were getting advice in those Podesta emails, like you need to, and she did. Basically, you need to. The advice was basically to the effect of, it's better to just suck it up and eat the legacy of you saying good things about the TPP in the past, because labor will kill us on this. They've got the votes,
right.
And we need to just go full all in against the TPP. Now,
and that's a different game, right? Because that's about, first of all, votes in Congress,
right?
Where Clinton's reach is a little more limited than making appointments. Like, I feel like labor certainly has a seat at the table when they have all their allies in Congress opposed to something. As far as, you know, getting a Secretary of Labor, that remains to be seen. It just, I mean, they've done a pretty good job within the Obama administration. The two previous Secretaries of Labor there have been pretty progressive. So it's an interesting question of how do you really make headway on something that is, you know, ultimately very inside. And one way is through the sunlight of seeing that most of the major appointments were already made a month before Obama ever got elected. You sort of get a recognition of the urgency here.
You know, and this is sort of looking at it from the opposite side, too, and it's sort of a little bit off topic here, but I'm not convinced, too, that you couldn't flip this. I mean, there was at one point a sense in the Senate and sense amongst the sort of despite the fact that Hillary Clinton, by all accounts, you know, in 2006, 2005 was going to be the nominee, period. Right. I mean, that was that you see a guy like Froman, and we should say, he's now the head of our trade. I mean, he's the one he's the key organizer and
he's the U.S. trade representative and behind TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
But I wonder if it's not Froman who basically says to Rubin et al., Obama's okay. You know, like, you know, at one point,
oh, he did.
Harry Reid and others, you know, said we can bet on Obama. Because we don't have, and so, you know, as much as Froman is giving the imprimatur to all these other people, it may very well be that Froman was the guy who gave the imprimatur to Barack
Obama.
Yeah,
you could see it that way. You could see it that way. I mean, it has been reported that Froman introduced Obama to Robert Rubin. When Robert Rubin put together this thing at Brookings called the Hamilton Project, which was sort of the key center left organization, think tank, sort of housed within a think tank for the Rubin sort of way of thinking. Obama, when he was a senator, was the first speaker at the Hamilton Project. So there definitely was. You know, and I mean, give Obama some agency. He needed to get in with these guys in order to, present some sort of seriousness or willingness to go along with the program or something like that. And that's something that, you know, he felt that you had to do at that time. That's certainly possible.
Interesting stuff. Well, I mean, so how would people act upon this at this point? Like, I mean, let's say, you know, like,
right.
as opposed to just sort of like, okay, we have this great insight.
I heard David Dayan on the program today, and he, you know, gave us some insight into the sort of the sausage making process, and has told us like this is a very important part of the making of the sausage that will be in January. Like, what do if you wanted to set out and have as much impact as possible, right? It's just a raindrop, but you know, we can have a bunch of raindrops. What would you do?
Right. I would say it's two things, and the story really works on two different levels. One was to exhort people in Washington who, you know, might be inclined to have a more progressive perspective, not to give up, you know, not to sort of, okay, it's time to go all in for Trump now. You know, now we got to shut it down for 3 weeks. And then you know, we can pick up the pieces afterwards. So part of it was to talk to that sort of progressive, professional left, if you will, and say, you know, you can't let your guard down.
Chew gum and walk at the same time.
That was kind of you know, sort of where the message at that level was. At the level of the rank and file, I do think they can have an impact on this process. If you find, you know, the groups like Root Strikers and the groups like the Campaign for America's Future who are really focused on this idea of personnel, you know,
PCCC is one of those groups.
Get involved with them. Certainly Root Strikers.
PCCC? No. Mm-hmm. Yes or no?
PCCC maybe. Certainly, whether it's Elizabeth Warren's, her own Senate list,
right.
Campaign list, you know, these organizations are out there, and they need to have the backup of millions of people. Credo, Democracy for America,
right.
These are the groups that have really been focused on this, and you know, it makes it harder to ignore if there really are hundreds of thousands and millions of people saying we need a change in the mindset of who represents the Democratic Party in the executive branch, and it needs to be more diverse, and that diversity is not just about race or gender, but it needs to be about the diversity of opinion.
And the worst thing about this campaign, I have to say, is that there's been no issues, right? I mean, the general election, all the issues came in the primary, and that was fantastic. And we saw Clinton move to the left and get more defined on issues than I think the campaign ever would want to. But since the convention, nothing. And it makes it very hard, I think, to get any traction on this accord, which makes, I think, sort of like this type of, you know, petitions and supporting these groups more relevant than normal, I think, frankly.
Yeah, just a recognition that, like, we're still thinking about this, you know, that the Bernie Sanders campaign's end did not end the desire to have a more representative government and reflective of the interests of the Democratic Party more broadly. I mean, Bernie Sanders got 42% of the vote or something. That you know, there's the desire for the person who heads up a coalition within the Democratic Party to reflect that coalition.
Is Sanders doing any of that work? I mean, is Sanders?
Sanders is doing a different kind of work, which is trying to elect allies at all levels of government, and
okay.
also run. I actually saw Sanders Friday at a rally here in Hollywood for a proposition that would be one of the first sort of price controls on prescription drugs in America. So he's doing, you know, he's doing something at a separate level. Not necessarily around personnel within the Clinton administration. He's doing something that would, you know, build sort of a progressive infrastructure politically around the country. So that's different work, but it's just as, I mean, it's no less important.
Right.
But I would say that you know, as far as this is concerned, You know, this is kind of going to dictate where this presidency goes in the next 4 years.
And again, even more so than I think in other times, because of the level of polarization and the likelihood that we will have a divided government.
Absolutely. And here's what I wanted to say. There was this claim in the early days of the Obama administration that he was paralleling a Team of Rivals. You remember
right.
this
yes.
book, Team of Rivals, yes. came out. And
it was all part of the Lincoln's, about the Lincoln cabinet. Thing, yes.
And just because Obama happened to pick Clinton, who he tussled with in the primary, there was this claim that there was this big team of rivals in the Obama cabinet. And there wasn't, actually. They were all on the same page from an ideological standpoint. They all went into a very comfortable range, and
Froman's
that
team.
Played out. Let's get a real team of rivals,
right?
In this Clinton administration, that you can actually have a wide variety of opinion, and the best policies can come from that.
Dave Dayan, I know we were only going to talk for 20 minutes. Could not help myself. I appreciate your coming on. We will talk to you real soon. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
That is David Dayan on perhaps the most important email. So I hope that at the very least, you know, and I've been looking for more on this personnel question and these other groups, and it's tricky to find. But so keep your eyes open on this. I mean, the key, I think, is to obviously focus on beating Donald Trump, but also on shaping the Clinton administration. And that's the point here, right? I mean, that is the biggest argument, it seems to me, as to there's many arguments as to why you would want Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. But from a movement perspective, it is because we, speaking of people who are to the left of center in this country, have a lot more ability to influence a Clinton administration than we do a Trump administration. And that needs to happen. The benefits of a Clinton administration are ones that we have to, if we want those, we need to work on them simultaneous to getting her elected. That shouldn't be such a hard thing to, I think, grasp. All right, we're going to take a break. I want to just remind you folks, this program cannot exist. Wait, what was it that we were going to talk about where the high low? What were we going to lead into that? What were we going to talk about? What was it? Was there a topic we were talking about?
What was it? No. No, it was not Yemen.
No.
I do not. Which one? Oh, yeah. Say it. Yeah, you got it.
What was it?
The firebombing.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay. I wanted to just talk about that because apparently, and this happened yesterday, right? This happened yesterday on Sunday. The Republican County headquarters in Hillsborough, North Carolina, was firebombed. I don't know if this happened on like late Saturday night or something, early Sunday morning.
Where's the shofar?
Michael just asked me to blow the shofar. We're not going to do that. Well, fortunately, nobody was hurt, right? And
well, first of all, just grateful that nobody got hurt.
Thank you, Gary Johnson.
That was so
Donald Trump, of course, immediately went on Twitter to blame the animals representing Hillary Clinton and Democrats in North Carolina. Now, Orange County, North Carolina, apparently is one of the most progressive and educated counties in the nation. It's, we don't know. And apparently they wrote on there too, right? Wasn't there like some graffiti like, "Hey, Republicans, go home, you Nazis," or something to that effect? Look, somebody obviously did this. It didn't do it itself. The idea that it was an organized Democratic response to the Republican county...
Blue team? Go.
Yeah, I don't... I find that hard to believe. And I find it a little bit hard to believe... well, let me put it this way. If someone came to me and said, "No, some morons who listened to Alex Jones did this because they're obsessed with the concept of false flag operations." Like, literally everything is a false flag to them. There's, you know, there's nothing that they report on that isn't a false flag operation. The idea that some of these guys were like, "Hey, what if we did crisscross, flip-flop, did our own false flag operation?" That doesn't seem to be, but who knows? Maybe there were just some people who are upset that the North Carolina Republican Party, in particular, has done everything it can to disenfranchise and attack democracy, as well as to hurt poor people by not allowing them to have Medicaid expansion. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why I can understand someone would be running. But, of course, violence is never
and
right.
And transgender people.
And transgender
and
people.
Gay people. And gay just people. Anyone, really.
That's
they
right.
can.
And obviously a lot of reason for anger. But firebombing never solves anything.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, but here's the point. And so... apparently, some Democrats or liberals online started a GoFundMe campaign to raise money to repair the Republican Orange County offices. And they raised something like $13,000. Now, Michael came in today and he was like, "I wouldn't give a dime for that." Now, I got to be
like
honest with you.
I'm really the villain of this
well,
set
no.
piece.
You said that. I'm not saying you're the villain. You don't have to get so defensive.
No. Like, I'm just noticing when you repeat my words, I don't sound very charitable.
Well, it's not like Michael came in like...
I'm so glad.
I'm not going to give...
anything go by. I had to get revenge.
I'm not going to give a dime for that. I will send some scented soaps and
I'll send them some aromatherapy candles
and some hand lotion.
Because I know it's very stressful and some organic hand lotion.
I'm not going to send a dime.
Oh, and a yoga coupon.
Yeah.
It would be so good for them if they started doing yoga.
Yeah, no. Michael just came in and he's like, I wouldn't give a dime for that. And I got to be honest, I would also not give a dime for that. I mean, I feel bad. I don't think violence is right. But if I'm going to spend a dime... there's a million.
No, literally.
I don't know if I could list a million off the top of my head.
But there are.
I just don't know if I have a time. But I know there are.
There might be 2 million.
I could
double
probably.
It up.
Individuals.
I feel like I could list like 75,000 off the top of my head. But I just don't think I have the time. Or
down
the
to like,
to do
there's
million.
A guy who asks for change by Metrotech. I would prefer to give him cash directly.
There's like, I feel like I've got like 1,500 of those guys.
Oh, no, I'm saying just as part of the whole list. Yeah.
In fact, I would go through, like, if I had the time, I feel like you could just hand me the phone book. But that's not the point.
You got a check coming your way, sir.
I do think, with that said, I do think that this as a political theater is very smart.
It's brilliant.
And in that sense, I would contemplate, I'm not going to, but I mean, if I got an email that said like, we need 10 cents more to do the full 13,000 to rebuild this thing, I'd probably do it. I don't know. Because I like the theater of it. I think it's important like that you don't allow Donald Trump to use this for whatever purposes.
Although it would be amazing if Donald Trump said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. I protect my people. And
right,
then the
of
check
course.
Never cleared.
Exactly. I'm going to send it. And
oh, no, no, in the mail. Yeah, in the mail.
Totally in the mail. Totally in the mail. But look, here's the point, folks. When they go low, we go high. We also go low. We do both. We do both.
That is this show just perfectly encapsulated.
We go high, but we also go low. We go...
You know what? We'd like to do a nice budgetary breakdown of the Ryan end. You know what? If there's a guy on CNN with a speech impediment, maybe we'll dip into that.
Okay, got it. Got
right,
it.
Right. I mean, I think
exactly.
Even, I would even argue there are times if we came up with something that we thought was good, we'd go lower.
Oh, I think we prove that regularly.
Yeah, no, I think we would go lower. All right, so with that said, please support the Majority Report. You can do so by becoming a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. So this is exciting. This is a funny story. So there's a place up in Hudson, New York, that serves the Majority Report blend as their house coffee.
I know about this.
Okay,
it's exciting.
I've told you the story. So went in there with Myla once, and they were selling the Majority Report blend. They sell all the Just Coffee coffees. Total coincidence. This is the place that was right across the street from where I had my office when I used to do my show up there. And so Myla just freaks out. That's my dad on the label. That's my dad. It's embarrassing. And like there's this, I don't know, 27-year-old barista who's just like, whatever.
And gave you like classic, but
it was just like whatever.
And, cool.
And but Milo was all excited. So fine. So this that happened months ago or a year ago. So I went in there recently and they had the Majority Report blend. Because Nikki now is a fan of this. For a while she didn't like it. She liked like more bitter. I don't know. So I put it down.
The Marin
I buy
brand.
That. I buy that. And she says, oh, this is you, the barista, same barista. This is you, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, she goes, we have another label with even a better picture of you on it. And I was like, what? So she goes in the back. And she brings back another bag of coffee. She puts it down, and it's the WTF blend with a picture of Marin. And then I'm like, nah, that's not me. That's a different guy. Like a not... That's not me at all. She goes, oh, okay.
But, all right, back to not caring, dude.
Still a better picture.
But it was just sort of embarrassing. Like, that's the other Jewy-looking guy. It's just these more well-known.
Wait, why was it a better picture? It was, like, more clear?
It's a fully animated picture of him instead of, like, the sort of the opaque
silhouette. Oh, okay.
So she thought it was the same person.
No, I'm the one who actually cares about society.
That's right.
Ma'am.
And then you just said nothing
I'm
about knowing him or like anything.
No, I said, I know that guy. It's not me.
I don't have a program built around my personal narcissism. What will I do, but more indirectly?
Yes. He's much more successful than me. Okay. So can I have my coffee, which is a much better tasting coffee?
And yes, I will take a stamp on my card
yes,
because I'm not
thank
as
you.
Successful
right.
as him.
Exactly.
Thank you.
I mean, Marin's a huge.
He's frankly big. Yes. He's big.
Okay, and you used to have a show with him. That doesn't mean that the bar, like the person to compare yourself to, is like the most successful podcaster.
I compare myself, but she did. I didn't do it.
He didn't go out asking for that comparison.
Here you are. I didn't say like. Do you have a Marin? I didn't start like going like, oh, I don't see you got a WTF plan. Ah, oh, wait, where are you going? Don't come back in the, oh, shit. Oh, damn it.
Damn
yeah,
it.
No, we sold out of that.
You know what would have been great is if you were like, okay, got it.
Got it. All right, look, we're wasting time here.
Oh, my gosh.
MajorityReportKickback.com, folks. If you buy your crap from Amazon or Jet.com, do it there. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. I'll take your IMs. We'll take your calls. Michael in tomorrow. I'm on my way to Vegas. Wednesday night, live debate coverage, maybe even streaming and live spin room coverage. We're working on it. See you in a fun hour.